With LinkedIn Jobs, we tap into a network of more than a billion professionals to help you find quality professionals quickly and easily for any role you need. Marketing wizards? Found them.
Software engineers?
Found.
That project manager I could never seem to hire?
And found. LinkedIn Jobs quickly matches your roles with candidates with the right skills and experience. In fact, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your first job for free and get started at linkedin.com/decide. That's linkedin.com/decide. Terms and conditions apply.
Presented by T-Mobile, the official wireless partner of Odyssey Sports. With an awesome network and great savings, there's never been a better time to join T-Mobile. Visit your neighborhood store to make the switch today.
And welcome back to The Scorecard, presented by Chicago District Golfer Magazine on Chicago Sports Radio 670 The Score. Barry Cronin, Mike Esposito here with you every Saturday morning. Welcome into Hour 2. And we are very happy now to head on out to the Circa Resort and Casino Hotline in Las Vegas. Circa Resort and Casino, home of the world's largest sports book. The new CEO of the USGA, Mike Wan, joins us. Good morning, Mike.
Hey, Barry. Hey, Mike. How you guys doing today?
Good morning, Mike. Good. And it's a real honor to have you. Thank you very much for joining us. We really appreciate it. Mike, you've taken over there, it's been about a month or so?
Yeah, you know, it's official on July 1. If I was being honest with you, I moved here in May and probably been doing, you know, the whole Teams and Zoom stuff since March. So it was maybe the longest transition in golf leadership history. So I'm glad we're official now.
Sounds good. Now, Mike, you know, you're a local guy. You grew up in Naperville. So, of course, we have solicited some questions from our listeners this past week. And, of course, now that we have our guy, quote, our guy, you know, it's all about Chicago politics. When are we going to get the U.S. Open back in Chicago? Can you make it happen?
Well, 46.2 seconds. That's how long it took you guys to get to a U.S. Open.
Exactly. You know what? You got to go right for the jugular, Mike. I figured you could handle it.
I did grow up riding my 10-speed bike, the old Schwinn 10-speed with my buddy Steve. We'd put our bags on the back of our bike, and we would ride out to Springbrook Country Club. I don't know if Springbrook is still there in Naperville.
But, I think it is, yes.
Used to be kind of out in the middle of the cornfields, and so we would it wasn't a close bike ride, but we would bike out there for literally for the day. We'd play until 1:15, until the Cubs leadoff man started, and then we'd go into the pro shop to watch the Cubs, and then bike back in the afternoon. Those were good growing up days.
That's for sure.
Yeah.
But, so will it be Medina 2029 or no? I'm just kidding.
Yeah.
Mike. What a life journey for you. We'll talk about some of the other stuff too, but I just want to talk. I'm always interested in your evolution. Growing up in Naperville, you went to Miami of Ohio, and your first job out of college is in the oral care marketing department at Procter & Gamble. So, and that prepared you to be CEO of the USGA. It's quite remarkable what happened.
Yeah, if we want to have a conversation about tartar control and gum health, I'm just as comfortable as talking golf. Yeah, I pretty much figured that golf was my fun pastime, not my office. So, I did the kind of the classical marketing Procter & Gamble start. And I remember one time talking to a recruiter, he had had a job he wanted me to go take, and I said no to the job. And he was kind of trying to push me to go take this job. And in the midst of finally realizing I wasn't going to do it, he just started asking me questions. You know, what do you do when you're not working? Where do you find peace? What do your families do when they go on vacation? I realized every answer I was giving him was golf related. You know, where do I go when I'm not working? I golf. You know, where do I go to find peace? I hit balls. My parents and I have taken golf resort vacations. We're not a typical family. We didn't have, you know, these big Sunday dinners or, you know, a chat after church. All of the conversations in the Wan family always happened on a golf course. I mean, I learned things about our family, good and bad. I got the birds and bees speech on the bleachers behind the ninth green at the Springbrook Country Club. So it was golf's a strange part of our life. It's more of a religion than a sport. So, I got an opportunity to go work at Wilson. Wilson took me back to Chicago, and then from Wilson, TaylorMade, and, you know, the whole thing kind of has led, you know, 30 years later has led to here.
That's kind of the old adage, right? Do what you love, and you'll never work a day in your life. And it sounds like you're living that out now.
Yeah, it's funny. I remember when I left Procter & Gamble, the CEO at the time of P&G said, golf's not something you work at. Golf's something you do when you're not working. And I remember as soon as he said it, I thought, you know what, that's exactly why I got to go. I mean, I don't always want to come to a job so that I can look forward to the time when I can get away from the job. And now the same thing. I mean, most of my days are spent on a golf course. And if you could have told me that back when I was riding my 10-speed to Springbrook, I would have been a lot more comfortable about the future.
And the other thing on your resume, Mike, that sort of threw me was you became CEO of Mission Hockey. You were a VP of marketing at TaylorMade, and then all of a sudden you went to Mission Hockey. I suppose that was because you had the CEO job.
Yeah, I mean, a couple of things. I mean, this will tell you how clueless I am. So I came back from the board meeting. Adidas bought TaylorMade in the middle of my run, and it was really a great experience. And Adidas was not only flush with cash, but they felt like an underdog. And we were number two at the time to this new company called Callaway, which dates me. But the Adidas run was unbelievable. I came back from a board meeting in Germany, and I remember saying to my wife, I think it's time for me to go. The learning curve's kind of flattening out. And Adidas had just asked us to grow at kind of high single digits, 7%, 8%, 9% a quarter, and we've been growing at like 100% a quarter. Mm. So that's probably the right job for somebody else. So I said to my wife, I think TaylorMade is about as big as it's going to get, so I think it's time to leave. When we left, they were about $750 million. I think they're now about $1.5 billion, so I only missed that by 100%. But I met a guy who owned the Minnesota Wild at a dinner, and he had owned an equipment company that wasn't doing well. And at the end of dinner, he's a good guy. I mean, just turned out to be a great friend in life. He hugged me at the end of dinner and said, would you think about coming and working with me? I think we can learn a lot together. And, hadn't hugged another man in a long time. And nobody just sort of asked me to. Nobody sort of asked me to do a job like that. It wasn't, he just sort of said, would you think about it? I think we could be good together. We could learn a lot. And he was just one of those guys that came in my life at the right time. So, yeah, I really went there to try to help him save his equipment company. In the midst of that, we met the guy who owned the San Jose Sharks, and he joined in as an owner. And we had a good 10-year run growing a hockey equipment company and sold it to the number one hockey company back in 2008. And at the time, living in California, promised my wife I'd never make her leave California, that I was going to, whatever I did next, I wouldn't travel as much. And obviously, 6 months later, I became the commissioner of the LPGA. We moved to Florida.
Exactly. Exactly. And that was so cool about, you're here you are. And I remember when you got hired, I thought, oh, Mission Hockey, he's ahead of that. And now LPGA, that's kind of a different thing. So, and when you took over the LPGA, Mike, I just remember that previous commissioner, they had some real problems and they had a lot of dissent among the ranks. And I thought whoever takes this job is going to have a hard row to hoe. And you took it over, and I'm telling you that folks who don't follow the LPGA, it really is, you took it over and made it great, really.
Yeah, it was struggling a bit. I mean, there was a few issues, but what in business, I always believe in, honesty is the hardest thing to get. I mean, everyone will tell you that things either aren't wrong or a really bad decision was just because of market dynamics. I mean, just coming clean is the first step. And when I walked into the board of the LPGA during the interview process, they were so honest about the challenges that they had and the things they couldn't really figure out. And it's, honesty attracts me. And it was, I remember saying to my wife, I mean, these guys really understand the problems they're facing. They don't know what to do about them, but they really understand. And that's usually the hardest thing to get out of a board of directors sometime. And it was so refreshing. They had, on their board, 8 of the 15 people were actually players, So in a board meetings, half the people had a glove hanging out of their back pocket. And I thought, I thought that was refreshing from a sport perspective. I said many times, Roger Goodell had 10 players and 10 owners to report to. The NFL would be a different sport. There wouldn't be unions and lockouts and strikes because at the LPGA, the players have control of the business, So it's I thought that was exciting. I mean, Julie Inkster, Helen Alfredson, Pat Hurst were all on the board,
right.
And they were the ones, kind of peppering me with questions. So, it felt like, if I was being honest with you, back then, I kind of way I explained it to my wife is golf had been so good to me my whole life. I felt like this was my chance to kind of give back. This was a business that needed some help. I felt like I could do it, and I knew I could learn in the process. But I kind of thought I was going there to help help them. And, 12 years later, just the opposite. I mean, I learned so much more than I ever taught them, and it was a great run, put together a really strong team. And, you're right. I mean, now, 12 years later, I'd say women's golf about as strong as it's ever been. And coolest thing I think about that whole thing is the fastest growing segment of golf in America is girls under 18. I never thought we'd be able to say that in the game. And so the future of this game is more female than ever. And, you know, there's only one way this sport was going to grow, and that was going to be let the other half in. And so that's really happening at unbelievable levels at the youth ranks.
No, and Mike, it's a great story, and certainly great success that you had there with the LPGA. When you went in there, because it really was, like you said, there's a lot of work to do. I mean, more TV, obviously, more tournaments, but it was a difficult road, right? I mean, this was not something that says, oh, we're going to have more tournaments. Oh, we're going to, you know, increase the purses. This is something that you really had to put the blood, sweat, and tears into.
Yeah, and I mean, I enjoyed that. I mean, it was... It was kind of funny. I've been a part of a lot of businesses that have gone global, whether it's TaylorMade or Crest Toothpaste, you know, certainly Mission iTech. And going global, taking your brand around the world is makes for a great PowerPoint slide in a board meeting. But it's really difficult to actually do in real life. I mean, you spend a lot of time away from home. You make a lot of mistakes. There's a lot of, you know, you're asking a lot of individuals to go live somewhere and be homesick. And it's really uncomfortable, you know, to try to figure out how to take a brand global. And the LPGA was sort of right in the beginning stages of it. Players were coming from all over the world. There was now interest from other parts of the country. Some of the U.S. players and sponsors weren't sure how to, you know, feel about that. The fans in the U.S., you know, didn't like that there wasn't, you know, 8 out of 8 U.S. flags on the top of every leaderboard. And so they were kind of in that stage of maybe we should turn back, which happens to a lot of brands when they go global. It's you try it for a while and you think this isn't so much fun or profitable, so they go back. But I'd been through enough of those to walk in and say, guys, this is going to be uncomfortable for a couple of years, but let's imagine the other side. I mean, today, when I got there, we sold our TV rights to 11 countries, and today they sell their TV rights to 190 countries. It's, you know, it's wow. It's a tour that's literally televised all around the world virtually every weekend, and It just wasn't that. And we didn't really have great ratings in the U.S. with some of those challenges, too. But, you know, we quickly became the number two viewed tour here behind the PGA Tour, which gave us TV opportunities. But if you watch the LPGA, I mean, they play in 15 different countries, you know, 22 different states. It is a truly global brand. There's 40 different countries represented every time they tee it up. So I've said this many times, every sport is going global. They're just going global at different speed. I mean, basketball's got players from all over the world. Baseball's got players from all over the world. And there's a reason why. One, athletes are coming from all over the world, but the value of that is unbelievable. You can there's a reason why Premier League soccer out of England does so well. It's because every country in the world buys their TV rights. So we went from a tour that was essentially trying to put on tournaments to make money. And you guys know, because you're close enough to it, golf tournaments aren't as profitable as they appear on TV.
Right, exactly.
The real profitability is putting on an event that's interesting enough that the world wants to watch on TV, like the Olympics that are going on right now. It's, you know, the engine of the Olympics is worldwide TV, and the engine of the LPGA is the same.
Mike, when you took your LPGA experience into the interview at the USGA, you're not a guy with a safari hat walking around on the greens trying to figure out where the holes should be located. You know, you're just totally off type for the traditional USGA CEO. So I wonder what that interview was like when you went in there to talk to the blue coats in New Jersey.
Yeah,
but you probably did it on Zoom, so whatever. I don't know.
No, actually, the first meeting was face to face. I actually got a call from Stu Francis, the current president and head of the executive committee or their board. And I remember thinking when I first, you know, started talking to him that this was a joke, right? I mean, at the end, we were both going to laugh and say, because I know him, you know, I present a lot to the USGA and different things I was doing. And as commissioner, I knew a good chunk of both the employees, but I knew a lot of the board members too. But, you know, I had announced that I was leaving the LPGA, and they had announced that they were looking for a head of the USGA. But I don't think either one of us naturally went there for all the reasons you just said. I mean, the USGA has typically been run by 30-year USGA people, and it's kind of the way it's always been. Right. And I'm certainly, to your point, I'm certainly not a guy who's, you know, who's testing the water levels of a green. It was different. So he just said, "Hey, you know, you're going to be at the U.S. Women's Open, and we were playing it at the you know, end of November, or I guess it was early December in 2020 because of the virus in Houston. I was going to be there. They were going to be there. So he said, you know, let's just make it informal, and maybe you can meet with our selection committee." And I remember saying to him, like, just so we're clear, like, if you bring me in, I'm not going to be able to adjust me. Like, I'm going to answer questions the way I feel like I answer questions. And I said, the good news is that will probably end this pursuit pretty fast, you know, because, I mean, I don't think you're going to like my answers to a lot of questions. But just the opposite. I mean, I probably did answer just the way I thought. But at the end, I think both they were more interested and I was more interested. I was interested because I like the LPGA. They were asking real, honest, fair questions. There's things about the USGA they wanted my perspective on, and they wanted the different perspective from an outsider. And I was really impressed by the fact that these were things that they were, you know, they were asking questions about and critiquing. I didn't think of the USGA as a group that kind of challenged, you know, how we've always done it. I just assumed they just always did it the way they always did it. And so just like the LPGA, their honesty, that, you know, their openness and my craziness didn't seem to knock them out of their chairs. So, it, you know, what started as kind of a, well, let's just see how it goes, kind of led to this.
Talking to Mike Wann, the new CEO of the USGA. And so, Mike, you mentioned what the challenges were and what you guys did when you were there at the LPGA. So as you embark on this journey, what do you see as your top one or two items to take care of in terms of growth and globalization, I would guess, are on that list in terms of the USGA?
Yeah, I mean, I'm a guy who starts with the foundation. What I mean by foundation is I start with the people and the team. If you get the team right, everything else will take care of itself. So, you know, I'm spending a lot of time in this first month anyway, trying to just assess the different businesses, how we've got the businesses structured out, who we've got in what seat, and, you know, and making sure that we can build the kind of team. At the end of the day, I mean, I've said this many times in many interviews, the USGA is never going to be good if Mike Wann's good. The USGA is only good if Mike Wann puts a team in that's going to be much better than him. So, you know, a lot of evaluation there. I'm going to every championship for at least a couple of days. Two reasons. One is I want to see all the USGA championships. I've been to a few, but I haven't been to all. And there's something about seeing the U.S. Girls Junior Amateur or seeing the U.S. Senior Women's Open. They're just different than the regular tournaments on either of their regular schedules. All the people, you know, during the summer of the USGA are generally out at events. So when I want to meet the team, I've got to go out there and do that. But, you know, I'm going to start with, you know, three big question marks. Like, I don't know that anybody else could walk in and be sort of as objective as I can be to just say our championships, you know, what do we need to do to take those to the next level? I think, you know, players count on the USGA being one of, if not the best, you know, opportunities in their career, whether they're a junior, whether they're an amateur, whether it's four ball or the US Open. And I want to make sure that we're continuing to push the envelope there. I've always been impressed with all the things the USGA does that they almost never talk about. Or I don't mean that in a bad way. I'm just saying that the USGA's impact on course rating and world handicapping system and agronomy support is unbelievable. And I want to dig into that business and just make sure that, one, we can take that to the next level and communicate it. And the third is the future. In each one of these jobs I've had in any business, but certainly in sport, is I really believe that people sit in positions like mine have to be much more focused on the next 100 years than the last 100 years. I think a lot of sports executives kind of spend a lot of their life talking about what happened and how great those things were. But, you know, the future of the game's counting on us to think a lot more about the future. So, you know, we spend a few million dollars a year in course research and water economy and building a sustainable future for this, you know, for this sport. I just want to make sure that my kids have the same kind of Springbrook Naperville experience that I did. And I think if we're not spending our time focusing on that, and, you know, we could wake up with, you know, with golf being a different sport. I've said this many times. I like to bowl, but I don't want golf to be bowling. There's a lot of reasons why people wake up every Christmas morning and unwrap a new club or get membership to a club or just get a gift card to go play golf. And there's an excitement level that comes with this sport that, you know, we don't want to take for granted. So I think spending probably majority of my time once I'm really in the seat, thinking about the next 20, 50 and 100 years is really where I'll try to keep my focus.
Mike, a lot of people talk about distance and maybe should the men's pro game, the PGA Tour players, and maybe even some of these college players now that just hit it so far, should they be playing maybe under a different set of rules or in terms of the golf ball, a different ball, a tournament ball? You know, Augusta National's talked about this for years and it's never happened. I know you can't answer that question right away, but is that something that obviously the USGA is going to have to talk about, or how does that get resolved?
Yeah, I mean, I wouldn't say talk about as a forward-looking. Been talking about deep into research. I've probably sat through 30 hours of research results already. I think the bottom line is, you know, in any sport, in any facet of life, I mean, there's at some point there's got to be a total speed limit if you want to kind of keep things from being chaos, whether you're driving down the highway or hitting a baseball or tennis ball. Or, you know, how high is the basketball hoop? I've said this many times in many interviews, you know, nobody likes a cop and nobody likes being pulled over for speeding. But thank goodness we have that. Otherwise, you'd have sort of chaos and the future wouldn't look safe. So I feel like one of the responsibilities that the USGA both has to accept and does together with the RNA is making sure that we set boundaries that, you know, that can protect us long term. It's funny. I've sat next to a lot of people on a lot of planes in the last few months and they're like, please don't put limits on distance. And I think I said to them always, you know, there's been limits on distance for 60 years, right? I mean, there are already controls in place. The only question is, are those controls good enough? Will those controls help us into the future? So it's not like we're sitting down for the first time saying, hey, should we? I think back to your question, there's a lot of ways to kind of skin this cat. I mean, one would certainly be, you know, a separate ball or, you know, a separate rule. I'm not sure, you know, walking in anyway, and I got a lot to learn. I'm not sure that's either one, the only way, or two, the best way. I do love the fact that, you know, everybody in this sport sort of plays by the same rules and the same equipment right. standards. And if we could continue on that, it'd be a preference. You know, if right. you can't, but it's certainly technically capable to say we can, as we have for the last 60 years, you know, we can have limits and then, you know, under those limits, let innovation go. I've said this and I believe this, you know, the hundreds of millions of dollars spent every year in research among our equipment companies to figure out innovation and get players excited and help make this game, you know, more exciting to play is not something that I want to eliminate. So I'm not a guy who's going to come and throw a wet blanket over all that and say, sorry, this is as far as we go. And whatever you owned in 2021 is going to be as good as it gets in 2031. Mm-hmm. So we will always want to make sure that we establish some standards, let the R&D people go nuts to kind of figure out innovation within those standards. But I do feel the responsibility just to make sure that, you know, we don't have, I mean, I've been around too many course developers right now that tell me they're building an 8,600-yard golf course.
Right.
And what that means in terms of space and land and, you know, water and you know, and servicing that land is pretty rough. So I think we just got to make sure that we don't, like I said, if your future is on, if your vision is on the next 50 to 100 years and making sure our kids have a better experience, this is one of the responsibilities at the USGA we've got to take serious.
Well, and Mike, we need to let you go while we're out of time here, but I have to ask, because Barry points this out, you mentioned your origins in Naperville. So football fans will appreciate this. So Barry tells me that you were supposed to succeed Sean Payton at Naperville Central as the quarterback of the football team, but then your family moved. Do I have this correct?
Yeah, well, at least I think I was supposed to see. I'm not sure if the coaches would agree with it. Unlike Sean, I was a walk-on quarterback at Miami of Ohio, and everybody says to me, why didn't you play 4 years at Miami of Ohio? I said, because they posted the depth chart. And I said, what's that mean? I said, I was on page two. So you have to turn the page over to see where Mike Wan ranked in quarterbacks. But no, Sean is a good friend, and we went through kind of Pop Warner, and I was always 1 year behind him. So when he was a sophomore, I was a freshman, and vice versa. But my junior year, yeah, we moved to Cincinnati. I kind of lost touch with Sean for a while, and awesome to see what he's done. He always had a crazy football mind, and it's good for the game that he's still in it.
Pop awesome. Warner, I even played Pop Warner. Isn't that awesome? So maybe I get a job at the USGA someday. No, just kidding. Well, thank you so much for being with us, Mike. But thanks so much for being with us. It's really an honor for us to have you. We could keep you for another hour, I'm sure, and keep it interesting. But, you know, such is radio.
Well, I appreciate you guys. And just hearing from somebody from Chicago brings back good memories. So hopefully, to your point, we'll get there sooner than later and we can play some golf ourselves.
Sounds good. Thank you very much,
Sounds
Mike.
Sounds great.
Have right a great day. Good luck.
That is Mike Wan, the new CEO of the USGA. Great stuff there, and we are terribly late for a break, Barry, so we are going to do that now. We're going to talk Western Amateur when we come back on The Scorecard, presented by Chicago District Golfer Magazine on Chicago Sports Radio, 670 The Score.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can spend another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. With available H-Track all-wheel drive and three-row seating, my whole family can head deep into the wild. conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/recommend today.
And we are back on the Scorecard, presented by Chicago District Golfer Magazine, with Barry Cronin, Mike Esposito here on 670 The Score. We're here until 8 o'clock talking golf, and Barry, that was a wonderful conversation there with Mike Wan, local native, Naperville to be exact, and the new CEO of the USGA, and really some a fascinating backstory, but really some interesting stuff as he talked about what he sees coming for the USGA.
Wow, what a personality, huh?
Sure,
man, oh man, it's like he's driving down the highway, get out of the way. So, boy, what a culture change for the USGA. I mean, you know, that's a pretty blue coat type, tie kind of people, you know, walking around in their safari hats, making hole locations, and they do a lot of other things, but that's the image. And, you know, there's been a lot of negativity about the USGA because some of the course setup disasters that they've had in recent years. And so, like Mike Wan said, he's not going to be the guy setting up the golf courses or doing any of that. He didn't do it with the LPGA. He's not going to do it with the USGA. He's going to designate somebody to do that or a committee to do it. Whereas, you know, during the U.S. Opens in the last several years, you would see Mike Davis out there with his stimp meter, you know, mm-hmm. figuring out where to put the hole locations. And, you know, over the years, the PGA Tour players that played in the U.S. Open, just there was a lot of animosity and antipathy between that group and the USGA. And I just listening to Mike Wan, that's not going to happen anymore. That's going to change because he's going to listen to those guys. And, you know, that doesn't mean that he's going to make U.S. Open courses as player friendly as some of the PGA Tour courses are. But it does mean that I think there'll be better relations between the USGA and the players.
Yeah, and you know the first few things he said. What number one, getting a great team around him, and he talked about all the success that they had globalizing the LPGA when he was running the LPGA, and I would expect similar type things here coming in for the USGA, and really. He said it several times during that interview, you know, his children's children and making sure the game, you know, 50-100 years from now is still in a great place. So that's, I mean, it's great stuff. And like you said, we could have talked to him for an hour and a half, and I'm sure it would have never been boring. We would have sprayed all fields, but obviously in radio, we're limited to how many segments we have, but that guy is certainly, I think, a bold choice and a good choice for the USGA.
Right, Mike, and you know what he said was interesting about there being a speed limit on the ball and equipment, et cetera.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, with him having been an executive with Wilson Golf and with TaylorMade, I mean, he certainly knows that side of the business. And you know, you don't want to create rules that are going to destroy those businesses because people love getting new products and they love mm-hmm. the equipment has helped players. Over the years, and it's really made golf more fun. And certainly, you know, when you and I played, we realized that we don't need to have our ball limited in terms of distance. We need as much distance as we can get.
That's
the guys we need to limit the distance maybe on a guy like Bryson DeChambeau and Dustin Johnson and some of these guys who hit it so far off the tee that it makes the courses that they're playing obsolete. And in a way, we discussed that a little bit when we talked about the Western Amateur being over at Glenview. Glenview's 6,800 yards, and they can put those tees as far back as they want, but you really better grow the rough because it's going to be hard to hold these kids down because they hit it a mile. Even the juniors, the Western junior that they had over at Onwensia Club a couple of weeks ago, I mean, those kids hit it a long way. So they're not totally refined golfers, so they still have to chip and putt, so that's a big part of the game. But even at the D1 college level, you might see some controls put on them. So it's interesting. So anyway, I mean, I think it's gonna be a great time for the USGA because he's unlike these other characters that have been in there.
Yep.
You know, these old school guys that are just
right.
They're just from another era, and he's not from another era. He's from our era, and it's great.
Yeah, no, I couldn't agree with you more. And sometimes a little dose of change and a big dose of energy is exactly what organizations of any kind need. And certainly seems like Mike is going to bring that into the USGA. So exciting stuff there. You mentioned the Glenview Club, Barry. We're going to head there next, although not literally. We're not going there physically. We will be talking about the Glenview Club and the Western Amateur, which is this coming week. Barry and I were there at the media day, played in the media round. We're going to talk about the tournament. Lots more on the 119th Western Amateur coming up when we return on The Scorecard, presented by Chicago District Golfer Magazine on Chicago Sports Radio, 670 The Score. Final segment for us here on The Scorecard, presented by Chicago District Golfer Magazine. Minnesota music this week, Barry. We don't do Minnesota music without Prince. That's just a rule. We have to do it. The 3M Championship in Minnesota this week. So, Prince, we need to have him. We also want our listeners to head to the CDGA's website, cdga.org/contest. We want to give you stuff. Register to win a CDGA starter pack. You'll get an Imperial hat, towel, and zero-friction Super Tube with Spectromat balls, tees, and a universal fit glove. Everything you need to start the season. That's cdga.org/contest. We want you to do that because we like giving you stuff. And we're givers that way.
We are givers. And the CDGA are givers. So it's good.
Absolutely. And also good is this week's upcoming Western Amateur, and lots of exciting stuff going on at the Glenview Club this week. Pearson Cootie, the defending champ, he'll be there. Lots of other great golfers. But the nice thing, the cool thing, I think, among other things this year, Barry, is that we can watch. We can watch it on, I was about to say we can watch it on TV, except it's not going to be on actual TV, but we could watch it on just about any other device.
Right. We say quote TV. Right.
Right.
So it's
air
kinda
quotes
like,
TV.
It's kind of
exactly.
Like TV.
Yes.
Yes. Thanks to BMW, and which is sponsors the BMW Championship, which is conducted by the Western Golf Association, which will be in August out in Baltimore, Caves Valley. They're helping to sponsor this, and also Peter Millar, which makes clothing, golf clothes, a lot of golf clothing they make. So yeah, they're gonna live stream it on golfchannel.com and also their website, thewesternamateur.com. And there's gonna be replays on the Peacock streaming service and golfpass.com. So if you got all that straight, good luck.
I do. Well, and you know what I have found, Barry, as my kids have gotten older, is they don't actually watch TV. They watch their devices. They watch their videos on their devices. They watch whatever TikTok is doing these days. And I am the wrong guy to talk about any of this. But they'll know exactly what this means. That is the right age group to have. The younger generation will be able to find this pretty easily, and I think you and I can manage to find golfchannel.com, right? I mean, I think we can.
I think we could. I kid. You know, we're a lot more hip than we're giving ourselves credit for.
That's true.
Well, I don't know about
maybe,
that. But anyway, but yeah, listen, they're gonna do this on July 30th and Saturday, July 31st. So that'll be the Sweet 16 match play element of the competition. So what happens is the Western Amateur is like a great tournament. It's it is to me the best amateur tournament in the world. They have 72 holes of stroke play, and then they cut it to the Sweet 16 for match play. So that by the end of the whole thing, the final two guys, if they can actually stand up and walk around, have played about 144 or more holes of golf within about 5 days. Mm-hmm. And that doesn't count the practice rounds.
Right.
So it is really, it's an endurance test, and it's a test of quality. And there have been some real quality winners and over the years. And, of course, the Sweet 16 lineup that's been in existence since the mid-1950s is really a who's who of golf and Hall of Famers. So it's really quite a field. And this year, they're going to have names that maybe some people, you know, if you're kind of a golf nerd, you're watching the Walker Cup on the Golf Channel, Ricky Castillo, William Mao from Pepperdine, Stuart Hagstead, and Peter Fountain from North Carolina, Sam Bennett from Texas A&M, they're going to be there along with a couple of kids whose names I can't pronounce because they're so long. But
I was going to ask
that's,
you.
That's your gig. That's your gig because you're the professional broadcaster. I am just a guy off the street about golf.
I was gonna say some international players. Bo Jin, that's an easy one. Yuxin Lin, I think, is the other pronunciation from China. Now, right. I apologize to any Thai listeners because I'm going to try, but Puit Anupan Subasi, I think, is the pronunciation of that guy's name. And apologies to our Thai listeners and to the young man. But I think,
you know,
I gave it a whirl.
I know, Mike, and I always think when I see names like that, I go, well, what would the general managers in baseball in the 1950s, how would they have changed that name?
I think, yeah.
Because, you know, they would have anglicized all the Hispanic players would be, you know, Johan Moncada would be Johnny, you know, Johnny something, you know.
Right.
Anyway.
I was just, yep. No doubt about it, but it's a great field. It's international standouts, American standouts. You mentioned Walker Cup team members playing there. I mentioned Pearson Cootie, who is the defending champion. But it's really a full field, a full event. It's a great event. I know you love this, so.
They do a great job of Steve Prioletti, who is kind of the on the ground guy for the tournament. He does a great job of recruiting terrific players, and you know his boss is Vince Pellegrino, and Vince is telling him to do this to get the best players that you can in the world. And I know it's been a bit of a challenge with the COVID and the travel restrictions, et cetera. But a lot of the foreign players, international players, play golf in the United States in college. So a lot of them, I think, stayed here. And they stay here during the summer anyway to play a lot of the top amateur events. There's a whole elite amateur event schedule that goes on. And it's culminated by the Western Amateur and then, of course, the U.S. Amateur a couple weeks from now. So, and like we talked about the Glenview Club, just an historic club, you know, talk about it, it's totally under the radar, just like on Wensia, we talked about the Western Junior, Glenview, totally under the radar. They hosted the 1899 Western Amateur and Western Open. They're located in a little place called Golf, Illinois.
Yep.
That's the name of the little hamlet where it's located.
Yep.
And now it's hosting the Western Am this week, and it started out as a 5,700 yard course, but now it's 6,800 over the years. It's expanded, and
for golf course architecture nerds, which there are some in our listening audience.
Sure.
I'm sort of one. I wouldn't classify myself as one that some of these guys, you know, if it's not a Seth Rayner design, they won't even play it. But I you know, this is interesting. So Tom Bendelow, who designed all three courses at Medina, was a very prolific Scottish golf course designer back in the day. Laid this out first. He was the first architect there, and then in 1913 to 15, Donald Ross and Harry Colt, two huge names in golf course architecture, came in and did it. And then the ball changed. The ball started to go farther. And in the 1920s, a guy named William Flynn, who's a super golf course architect, who designed Marion, the Country Club at Brookline, Cherry Hills, and he did the redesign at Shinnecock Hills, was in there designing and redesigning and expanding Glenview Club. So the club has a tremendous architectural pedigree. And I think, you know, and they welcome you to go out there. They don't charge you anything to get in. And I say this every year, boy, you can come out and see the future great players of the world on these great old golf courses. And the nice thing is, nobody comes. You can't get any fans to come out there. It's crazy. Well, but maybe this year, you never know.
Well, and Barry, I could tell you, because I was just going to ask you, we got a text from Mark from Lyle who said, hey, is this open to the public, and what do tickets cost? So you have just answered his question. I bet you Mark from Lyle turns out at the Glenview Club this week for the Western Am, because it would be a great place to go visit. It is a great place to go visit, as we found out when we were there on Media Day. I know you've been there before as well. But fans can go there and watch.
Yeah, absolutely. And parking is free. And, you know, it's just a real cool place to walk around. It's like if you were going to the park, this would be a good place to be. But anyway, and, you know, Mike, you and I had a good time out there. We played golf. With I don't know how we got in this pairing, Mike. This was quite amazing. You know,
yes, I
mean, typically now we got paired with the club president Scott Buell and Cliff Schwander, who's kind of the who used to work for. He was an advertising guy for many years. I think he's in charge of the marketing for the tournament. So typically. We don't, guys like you and me, we don't get to play with the club president. You know, we get to play with some guy who's been at the bar for 30 years. You know, and they said, well, all right, we got to pair these guys with somebody. Let's put him. But normally, a guy like Dan Rowan will get paired with the club president, because Dan's such a good player and a classy guy and everything. But somehow we wound up with the club president, with Cliff. So we had a good time. It was great to see you there.
It was great to be there, and I appreciated the invite, and I appreciated Scott carrying me literally throughout the course and keeping us competitive, because we had quite a match on our hands. You guys bested us by a hole, but it was great fun, and it will be great fun this week out there at Glenview Club for the 119th Western Amateur. Another great show this week, my friend. We will chat with you next week.
Thank you, Mike. Always great being with you.
Great being with you as well. That's Barry Cronin. I'm Mike Esposito. Thanks to our guests, Ethan Farnham, Chris Green, and the new CEO of the USGA, Mike Wan. Thanks to Adam Studzinski for producing this fine program, as he always does. And thanks to you for listening. And stick around. Early Odds is next, right here on Chicago Sports Radio 670 The Score.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can spend another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. With available H-Track all-wheel drive and three-row seating, my whole family can head deep into the wild. Conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too, with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.